Welcome to Move the Needle. This show is designed to inform, educate, motivate, and provide perspective on all things related to pharmacy-provided immunization services. Let's start moving the needle. Hi, and welcome to this month's edition of the Move the Needle podcast, where I'm joined with Ed Cohen from Pharmacy Times, John Beckner from NCPA, and our guest this month, Dr. Tracy Poole. As the name implies, Move the Needle is designed to inform, educate, motivate, and provide perspective on all things related to pharmacy-provided immunization services. This episode this month is focused on taking a deeper dive into pharmacy-provided immunization services. John, we'll let you start this one off for us, since there's probably a lot to cover.
Yeah, we've got a pretty full agenda today, Jill. Thanks for that introduction, and it's great to be with you and Ed again. We hope you all had a wonderful holiday weekend, and we certainly hope the same for all those folks that are tuning in to listen today. You know, Ed, that thermometer keeps going up, so I guess summer is officially here.
You know, John, it's so nice, so nice, and I'm so looking forward to spending the next 100 days outside. I wish I could take my home office out on the patio and enjoy it out there. Maybe I could, you never know. It's great to be back together, and I look forward to truly engaging conversation. Very excited to have Tracy with us today. Tracy, you and I met as I boldly walked up to you and asked you, why is it that everyone in the room is coming to say hello to you?
We did. We absolutely did.
I just had to know who you were because the whole room was focused on you. So you must be somebody very important.
I don't know if I'm famous as much as infamous. So we'll have to, the jury's out on that one.
Yes. Well, we both have a similar problem. And when we go to conventions and meetings and such, but I believe that is a very good problem to have.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to, I guess, formally introduce Tracy. Tracy is someone that I've known for a long time. Being a Virginia pharmacist myself, I got to know Tracy when she was at Virginia Commonwealth University. And Tracy, you're certainly someone whose career I followed pretty closely for a long time, have great respect for you and what you've been able to accomplish. So, for the benefit of our listeners, I'll go ahead and do an introduction, and then we can turn things over to you for a few minutes. So Tracy is a graduate, as I mentioned, of Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia. After graduation, she completed a community pharmacy residency at Kmart, and that's how I got to know Tracy. I was working for UCROPS supermarkets, and we had a community residency program there. So there was a lot of interaction between the various community residents in the Richmond area through VCU. So I got to know Tracy very well in that respect. From that point, Tracy journeyed to Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee, where she joined the faculty. And you know, she's had a couple of community pharmacy practices in the Nashville area and has long been an advocate for community-based pharmacy services. So, Tracy, I think it would be great if you could, I know our focus on this podcast is immunization, so it would be really, really great if you could maybe fill in the gaps of that introduction and tell our listeners a little bit about your immunization journey and your practice today and, you know, how you keep yourself fresh and trying to stay away from burnout.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, John, thank you for those kind words, because I consider you a very close mentor of mine, especially in the immunization space, and learning from you and Dennis all those years ago, Dennis Stanley, really kind of put me onto, you know, my immunization journey with VCU being so innovative in those early years of immunization services. I was actually still in the group of students who we weren't required to complete the immunization training certificate, which is kind of mind-blowing to think about, especially now that vaccines are just they're not even a second thought. They're just so integrated into what we do as pharmacists. So I ended up taking the immunization certificate program through CVS, who I was working for at the time, and started doing clinics and things like that. I really just fell in love with the physical, part of actually giving the immunizations, but also the assessment piece of, you know, what people need and when. And as you know, in Virginia, you know, we've always had kind of a pretty wide scope. And so, you know, I remember as a resident, we had the H1N1 outbreak. And that was...
How could I forget that?
Yeah, that was an interesting time. And never in a million years did I imagine I'd live through two pandemics. Like in that short of a span, you know, I've been a pharmacist for 12 years now, and that's just wild. But that really prompted me to learn things about the system around, you know, immunization services, how they're manufactured, how they're distributed, you know, the registries and more of the administrative side of services instead of just direct patient care, and how that impacts, you know, how many people were able to immunize and prevent some of these crazy things like H1N1 or COVID. So as I moved into my career as a faculty member, I got certified to teach the immunization certificate program. And I've been one of the core group that's done that since I started at Belmont. And I've just really taken on probably, you know, if one of the faculty have an immunization question, there's about two of us that they come to, you know, and it's interesting how I have to keep up so that I can know those answers. Because when you become the point person, you know, you don't want to look silly. So that just kind of reinforced my need for continuous development, you know, in immunization services. And so from there, I've just been asked to, you know, I just recently did a 3-part series for PowerPack. You know, this podcast, it's like vaccines, especially since probably 2019, 2020, things have just sort of exploded. So that's kind of the gaps for my immunization service background. In terms of burnout, gosh, it's been a long couple of years for vaccine services. A couple of these sort of periods where I'll say stalled out, I guess, you know, where most people have gotten vaccinated and we're just kind of dealing with the stragglers. That's helped because I have never learned so fast in my entire life as it relates to COVID, and especially with the vaccines and having to implement all of those regulatory things and then also keep up with the ever-changing landscape of the recommendations. It's been tiring. It's been a lot, but you know, you just kind of keep your eye on the ball and think about what you're really doing for the country and for patients. And, you know, we're really blessed as pharmacists to be able to be seen as integral as we have been over the last couple of years.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more, Tracy. I think this has been a time when pharmacists have really been able to showcase, you know, our value, not only to obviously the government, you know, with all that's been required from the pandemic, but really other providers and the public in general. And I think you're spot on in your comments about, you know, it's been a tough time, and you know, we've all really had to buckle down, but you know, it's really been a very, very rewarding time in pharmacy practice. I know we're going to be talking about, and you know, I think one of the things that you've done, you continue to reinvigorate yourself and do new things. And I know you're very interested in the science of vaccine and the impact that that can have on pharmacists' confidence and transferring that confidence to patients. And I want to hear more about, I know you've recently done a paper. We're going to get into that in more detail a little bit later. So Ed, I want to go back to you and talk about, you know, this time of year. It used to be that, you know, when pharmacists got started with immunizations back in the mid to late 90s, you know, there was a particular time of year when immunizations were the focus. It was the fall and flu and pneumococcal, but now it's immunizations have really almost become a year-round service. And certainly we're entering time of year when people are beginning to travel, and travel vaccines are becoming the focus. There really isn't a lull these days, is there?
No, there isn't. And I will tell you that back 10 years ago, we started talking that immunization services were becoming a year-round activity. For those that purchase vaccines, February, March, and April is the key time of the year when you're buying your allocations for flu vaccine for the fall. 10 years ago, it started where the purchasing took on a whole new time of the year, and then as pharmacists privileged to immunize advanced across more and more states, we got to enjoy the fact of being able to provide more adult and adolescent vaccines. So it really doesn't matter what time of the year it is. And we've kind of developed this quarters of the year where you start out January, February, March with pneumo, flu, and then you add zoster, because that's as flu kind of subsides a little bit, you're infusing the zoster vaccine in there. And then, of course, the second quarter, people are starting to travel. You get into the third quarter, and now you're talking back to school and array of different vaccines there. And again, it goes to the fall. And each year, it seems that we're getting the flu vaccine a bit earlier and earlier, and people start immunizing flu in August. And there is no lull, to your point, John. And it's, you know, you think that because as Tracy said, it's become part of practice. It's very difficult for new graduates today to even think about pharmacists that were trained and immunizations were not a part of your everyday practice. It's really, we've come a long way.
And yeah, that's my story about how old I am now. As time has gone by, I'm like, yeah, I've really gotten up in the experience, because the students are like, oh, wow, we didn't realize there was a time when you would schedule these massive flu clinics instead of it just being like a prescription.
Tracy, you remember those flu clinics where the lines were halfway around the building. Those were pre-walk-in days. That's when you just had clinics and you didn't offer walk-ins as a convenience. You know, we've come a long way in a lot of respects.
Well, and actually full circle, if you think about it, because now we've gone more towards the appointment-based kind of model. Mm-hmm. And patients are so used to walking in, they're a little frustrated by where we had to pivot a little bit for the mass COVID immunizations. And so it's almost come completely full circle from those lines around the building to now patients are so used to being able to just access immunizations through a pharmacist that they're frustrated they can't seem to do that anymore.
Well, we've come a long, long way, because when I first started out back in the 90s, as John and I both have done that, we started out with roster billing.
Oh, yeah. That's rough.
Exactly. Oh, my.
It was very, very strange. It was, it's nice to have it part of the prescription fulfillment system where you can enter all the information, do your billing. It's also really nice for the patients to be able to access the system, download their forms and fill all that out in advance of coming to the pharmacy. Mm-hmm. The technology has sure, as it has in many parts of pharmacy practice, taken away some of that, those mundane tasks and made it more streamlined for us.
Yeah, Ed, you made a great comment. When we were talking yesterday in preparation for this podcast, I think you made a statement that really resonated with me. And what you said was, you know, there's always an opportunity to immunize someone. Somebody needs a vaccine every day in your practice. So you'd be hard-pressed to find a day where somebody came into your pharmacy and no one needed an immunization. You know, and I was just prior to this call, I was on a webinar, and it was by the makers of HepaSave, hepatitis B vaccine, and there's now a universal recommendation that everybody between the ages of 19 and 59 get vaccinated for Hep B. So that's just really one example of, you know, just such an opportunity for pharmacists to provide that service to patients.
You know, that brings up an interesting point, because we've done such a great job with the seniors. So the Medicare was always covered flu and pneumo, and the seniors came in and took advantage of our service. They were the early pharmacy adapters. As we see with COVID, the 19 to 64-year-old cohort, especially a lot of them that are healthy, discovered the pharmacy as a destination for not only immunizations, but testing and possibly other services. So the success of COVID for pharmacy, and I use that term lightly, the success of COVID. I just thought about that COVID is a terrible disease, but we have gotten a lot of accolades and success the profession of pharmacy because of this pandemic. And Tracy, you talk about burnout and balancing not only your practice, but your teaching and your children and your family. There's a lot of burnout out there. There's a lot of people who are tired. I think we need to focus on that passion and that excitement that we have the opportunity.
And like, I had a moment in the spring where I needed to take a break. I took about a 4-week break off work because, I mean, yes, I have young kids. I, you know, have about 3 different jobs in one, but, you know, I told my husband, you know, I just need a break. Like I mentally need a break. And he expressed to one of our coworkers, he had told me later, he was like, look, you don't understand at the pharmacy level, like there, she's been it when it comes to administrating some of these services and things and getting the calls and placing the orders and, you know, stuff like that. And I don't want to sugarcoat what pharmacists have been through, you know, through this pandemic at all, because especially, you know, in some of the other places, they're drained and exhausted. And I think the encouragement is, look, you have done a lot. We know it's been tough, but you have done a lot. And I think the part of the burnout is that they don't get recognized. Like we're celebrating as a profession, but very rarely do you hear us included in the healthcare heroes conversation, if you will. So yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right that there is a bright side to this, but of course the burnout has been real and I don't want to sugarcoat that for anybody because I myself had to take a break.
Unique to pharmacy either. I mean, all of healthcare has been put to the test and not that that makes it better or worse for pharmacy. Pharmacy is our world, of course, and it's firsthand for us to deal with this. But you bring up a good point that sometimes you just need to walk away for a bit and regroup. For people to look for a villain for burnout or to vilify employers or others because they're tired and they're exhausted, I think that's a topic for another time. But
for sure.
It's really, you know, we have to focus on the positive. We have to focus on that success that came to the profession of pharmacy. And we need to help people to realize, as you realize for yourself, that you just have to walk away for a bit and do what's right. Walking away 100%, probably not a good thing to do, but taking some time and regrouping and moving forward, I think, is what we really need to embrace for our frontline workers.
Yeah, Tracy, I'm, you know, Ed and I are in a little different position. You live it and breathe it every day and you're on the front line. So, I really appreciate you making that point. And, you know, I think, and I'd love to hear you comment on this and Ed, you as well. You know, one of the major contributors to burnout has been the continued frustration by providers about vaccine hesitancy. We continue to deal with that. Certainly was exacerbated by COVID, but there's been vaccine hesitancy well before COVID. My question to you and to Ed is, you know, as successful as the COVID vaccines have been, do you think that's going to help out in terms of providing the motivation for acceptance of all vaccines? Or, you know, is it, you know, still the concern about the safety and effectiveness of the COVID vaccines is going to have the opposite effect? Just curious to get your thoughts on that.
So I am actually very concerned that it's going to have the opposite effect because, you know, I know there are places with very high vaccination rates. But when you look at pockets like John, where we're from, you know, in Southwest Virginia, the rate is extremely low. And I'm concerned that this has now brought, you know, vaccinations in general to the forefront of people's minds. And we have very little education, you know, that's very publicly driven. And if you'll follow me here, kind of what my paper was addressing was the professional hesitancy. And I think professional hesitancy is at an all-time high now. And COVID's kind of been able to open that door, sneak in some of that questioning or misunderstanding, which I think also kind of bleeds into the public perception, because we are still one of the most trusted professionals. And if one of the most trusted professionals, especially in these very small rural communities that don't have a lot of access is saying, don't do this, we don't trust it. Well, what does that say about all other vaccines? And what does that say, you know, moving forward, as you know, COVID's going to be endemic if it's not already. We're going to see COVID around for a long time, I think. And so I'm very concerned that we're actually going to get further away from our, you know, healthy people goals and community goals and things like that, because I think this has really opened Pandora's box as it relates to vaccines.
Well, I just want to add on there. I like the way you've segmented the professional confidence or professional hesitancy. And on the flip side to that, the people coming to the pharmacy, back in the beginning when the vaccine was first launched, we heard about vaccine hesitancy, the fear of the vaccine, and it was bundled into a single term. It was everybody, you either were getting your shots or you were fearful or hesitant and not getting your shots. And with the public getting their voice and feeling more confident as people, individuals, we're seeing now a continuum of vaccine hesitancy, where people come to the pharmacy and decide to, some are accepting all vaccines, some are refusing all vaccines. But in the middle, you have people that are refusing some or accepting just some. And they're making these decisions on their own. And there may not be a rhyme or reason to some of what they're doing. And we have, you know, now you've got your professionals, Tracy, as you'll talk to, on the one side with their issues, and now you've got the patients coming with their issues. How in the world are we going to beat this thing and balance this thing and get people to understand what they really need and what will really help them?
Yeah, I think there's a high level of mistrust in the government right now. And I'm sure we could go on for days about how we think COVID could have been handled. And the vaccine, you know, was supposed to really be a celebratory thing. You know, it was really a huge milestone in vaccine development. You know, when I wrote this paper, started to write this paper, it was pre-COVID. And the mRNA section was small, because we've not really had, you know, we've been studying it for decades, but we've not really been successful with mRNA technology. And so really it was hugely historical and should have been so exciting, especially to professionals. Then all of a sudden it just kind of turned. And I do think that we're going to have to figure something out to gain the trust in the federal government, into even pharma, you know, again, to be able to reassure folks. And you would have thought that the death rates, you know, in unvaccinated people would have done some of that. And I'm sure that that has brought some of the vaccine confidence back the other direction. But I think it's through education. I really think it is, you know, if people are going to do their own research, which they are now, you know, Google is a real thing and you can find some credible things out there. It's really teaching people where to look for the information and how to, you know, how do we speak to people in layman's terms when you've got something so technical and scientific, you know, to help them understand what they need to. You know, again, this paper really came out of, we've gotten so rote with providing immunization services that a lot of times pharmacists are just giving them based on what the ACIP says. Sometimes, you know, that takes a while to catch up, of course, and we're not really understanding why or what patients can expect from, you know, different types of formulated vaccines. Then COVID happened and it became even more clear that patients need to look to us to understand. And so once you do that, maybe we can, you know, help educate patients in those layman terms and make them feel more confident. But if we can't, let's just say a professional is not hesitant, but they don't even really know how to explain why or, you know, what are the benefits, that kind of thing, then that also, I think, speaks to some increased hesitancy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not unlike any other, you know, salesperson. You have to understand the ins and outs of your product before you can become a good salesperson.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you, I had so many conversations with people I hadn't spoken to in 30 years who called me and said, what's going on with this fertility stuff? And if I hadn't really read, A, what's the theory? B, what's the basis behind it to be able to explain it, you know, and just said, oh, that stuff's, you know, it doesn't matter, it's not real. Well, that's not going to bring anybody to want to believe you.
You know, you can't, and you can't blow people off because their concerns are real. I mean, even though they, you know, from a scientific standpoint, they may not make a lot of sense, they're still their concerns and they're real. And you need to do whatever you can to address those.
Yeah, we created an FAQ document early on. It was just a running document of all the myths and the rumors out there. And we took, you know, the questions and the concerns, and then we had another box that had the scientific basis for our answer. You know, what is the concern? And here's, and I, you know, there were multiple times I would explain that to patients, either in the pharmacy or on the phone or it's Facebook, I mean, you name it.
So I'm curious, I mean, Ed raised a very real issue in terms of folks coming to the pharmacy, being selective in terms of the vaccines that they're going to get or they feel like they need. How do you address that specific issue in your practice?
You know, I try to get more flies with honey, right? So if somebody's outright saying, I don't want this, I don't need this, or even with a COVID vaccine being really hesitant towards, you know, the mRNA versus the adenovirus ones, you know, it's, I really try to listen to, I'll ask the hard questions about, you know, tell me a little bit about why you don't want this. And I try to listen, and then I try to reflect back. And then I try to pepper in a little bit of, okay, well, I understand that. However, I think, you know, really the reality that we see is X, Y, or Z based on their concern, you know, and I try not to push too hard. And it's really kind of against what we've been teaching with immunizations for a long time that, you know, we want to get them all their vaccines while we see them at the same time. But I have just found that doesn't work. And so establishing that rapport and relationship will keep them coming back. And often they leave feeling heard and sort of give in after a while, if that makes sense, after you have more conversations. But, I'll, you know, that's also not great for public health. But if they're not going to get them at all, you know, I'd rather them have a relationship, trust me, come back. So that's typically how I'll approach the selectivity of, well, I only want the flu shot, not the pneumococcal, or, you know, vice versa. Right.
Tracy, you've worked so hard. You have a style about you. You have that rapport with your customers and such. And then take that, you know, we have listeners that are all the way from the chains, you know, with hyper volume on the one end, all the way across the continuum to the single independent community practice that can really take care of their patients. And I know there's no simple answer or magic potion. To spend time with your patients and have those conversations is so, so important. And the unfortunate thing is, you know, you have the conversation today and they go back home and they have conversations with their extended family and friends. And so a lot of times you're starting from scratch over and over. It's if you had to leave us with something more scientific,
I would say motivational interviewing, if you're familiar with those principles. What that does is really it's designed to create ambivalence in the patient's mind themselves. So they come in and through questioning and reflecting back to them, okay, well, this is what I'm hearing. You know, here's, is this correct? And as you work through the principles of motivational interviewing, by the end of that conversation, the patient at minimum should leave going, well, maybe I do need to think about it that way, you know. And, you know, there's things called like roll with resistance, right? So when they push back at you, you kind of roll with that. You don't get into the negativity. And then you start sort of providing them with other types of information so that that resistance doesn't become the focus of the conversation, even though it can kind of feel that way sometimes. And ultimately, you know, you want to get them over the hump to, you know, agree to do something. But yeah, I would say motivational interviewing is probably the best option when it comes to things like vaccine hesitancy, because people have really strong opinions. That it's not, you know, it's not just like a statin, right? Where there are some, oh, I'm going to get some, you know, muscle pain, or you can kind of work through some of those. Vaccines, though, for some reason are very polarizing. And I think motivational interviewing will help get you closer to discovering their reasons so that then you can help them see what the benefits are and ultimately, hopefully, decide to get vaccinated.